The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Our guest will be Salarine McDonald, technical consultant in human behavior and strategic communication, Jabulous community interview specialist, right? So we say good afternoon. Yeah, man, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So it's not Salarine, it's Salon. You know who this is.
Oh, Salon. Okay, well, I mean, I go in my war radio, they gave me the wrong thing here, but oh gosh, boy.
So, if the person that gave me that spell my name as Salarine, it's me and them.
Salon. Well, we'd have a sort of something in the middle here, so that's what it looks like, Salarine. All right, okay.
Yeah, good afternoon, partner. Good afternoon, TNT.
All right. So talk to me. So yesterday was World AIDS Day and awareness to the youth. Where do you stand with understanding what, the AIDS is and the HIV? And, you know, sometimes things, we might think that AIDS is not no longer wrong. You know, sometimes we forget things and throw it around in the back, but it's still, alive and well.
Well, that it is. HIV and AIDS are still alive and well. You know, what you mentioned about thinking it's no longer there, the conversation has gone silent. Mm-hmm, and for our youth, that is an especially dangerous thing because... Mm-hmm. We want to make sure at every point that we prepare our youth, that we educate our youth. We're still debating in schools on if we should have comprehensive sexuality education, which gives a better idea of anatomy, of risks, real risks as opposed to imagined risks. We are still in need of putting forward things which get rid of myths and which deal with stigma and discrimination, because our young people are always at a critical point in the statistics. Back when I was a young person, young people occupied half of the statistics. Not much of that has changed because of the point of not providing the information, not having the key initiatives, not making sure that at every point we have these meeting points and we have these community interventions that are taking place on a large enough scale to treat with what our young people need.
Mm-hmm. But how can we do this in schools when we are not in Trinidad and Tobago, we're still in this taboo kind of dark ages where we're not even teaching sexual education in schools and children are having sex in schools, teenagers, you know, they're curious. And
but that's the reality. Mm. But that's the reality. That's the point that we have to move beyond. We have to move beyond the idea of trying to moralize an approach, a scientific approach, which has worked in the past, which was discontinued due to people feeling that if you teach people, young people especially, about sex and sexuality, that you're encouraging them to have sex, which is absolute rubbish, which has been proven not to be true. We've had initiatives that have focused on young people, but those things are not as well funded as we need them to be. We no longer have the presence of several organizations which took the brunt of the work out of the hands of the scared authority figures. We no longer have those groups because there was no succession planning. There was no ability to say, listen, locally, we have to put resources in place to make sure that we have these peer-to-peer approaches. So things like the RAPPORT program, things like the YMCA youth program, things like the Advocates for Youth Sexual and Reproductive Health, those programs have scaled down to an almost non-existent place in the community. And the discussion that these organizations would have put forth, the education that would have been brought, the discourse that's necessary for us to change these ideas and to have our young people aware of what exists, they're no longer at the forefront of the local scenario and we're feeling the impact of it.
But why have these things allowed, all these I remember that report, all these initiatives that you call there, why have they been allowed to just dwindle?
In Trinidad and Tobago and the wider Caribbean, when it comes to HIV and AIDS, people in authority did not get comfortable. And getting comfortable with the understanding that you have to keep a consistent presence, especially if you're treating with young people. So for instance, this year's theme had to do with taking the rights path. My right, my health, my access. It means that we had to ensure that for the fact that young people are having sex, the fact that they're exposed to sexual material on a daily hourly, minute by minute basis, it means that we had to have answers for these things to happen. The rapport, when it was taken over by the state, went through a series of defunding exercises to the point where it was stuck in a corner at one point of some health center somewhere, where one, young people can't access it, and it was targeted at young people, where the key information that needed to get there, but also because at one point they were muzzled. You were told that you can't speak this and you can't say that and you can't say the other, because uncomfortable adults who are uncomfortable with their own sexual issues were the decision makers. So it took a hit. All of these entities also succumbed to trend funding, which is we work with whatever the funders say to do. So if we don't have a funder that says fund young people, nationally, we have not been doing it ourselves, because we won't allocate an appropriate amount of the national budget to treat with the needs of young people.
Hmm. And where in getting these messages across? Because just the other day I was questioning family planning. Where is family planning? Where we are seeing so many teenage pregnancies, you know, and then a teenager will go in the hospital, you know, make a baby. Nobody asking who's the father. I think these things are supposed to be reported. I don't know if they're reported. And I was just asking family planning, because I remember when I was going to school, family planning mm-hmm. was very much active. You know, that is where you learn where condoms, they used to bring things, condoms in the school, this, that, but it just seemed like family planning. I mean, they're still there, but they're just not there, right? And
they're still there, but they're focused again. Remember, you run on funding. And if you're an organization that does not have funding to do particular programs, yes, you can do it, but it's not done on as large a scale.
Yeah, but who's supposed to be funding NGO, this? Who's supposed to be funding? I mean, they are NGOs, but they're supposed to be funding themselves.
Listen, realistically, the state, yes, I did say the state, is supposed to have taken a major part of this funding as part of the allocation of resources, but that did not happen. When a lot of the funding from World Bank and other funders, CEDA from Canada, the German Technical Corporation, when these people's funding was coming to an end, a part of that agreement was supposed to be that the state would undertake to provide the resources. The state never stepped up. Mm-hmm. And this has nothing to do with the party in power or the party not in power. Both entities have turned a blind eye to the need that occurs with young people and with young people needing to be armed and prepared to prevent HIV or to live with it, because that's another part of it. Our ideas on prevention need to take into consideration the fact that, yes, young people have been born living with and are living with HIV. And they, you know, there was no uptake of the understanding of how we treat with that or how we speak to that or how we speak to people about living with at any particular age, how we treat with support and guidance to ensure that we don't have young people falling into depression or falling victim to stigma and discrimination.
Right. And of course, things have changed with HIV over the years. And I mean, I don't know if Trinidad and Tobago is still that backward where somebody has HIV and, you know, you're scoring them for life. But people, like you said, they are living with it and it's not like a death sentence, so to speak, anymore.
Well, that's the thing. Eh? Unfortunately, the powers that be, and I say all the powers that be who have the responsibility to ensure that the discussion stayed front burner, that the issue of stigma and discrimination remains something that we actively treated with, they fell asleep on the job. So that we're back to square one, where people are still thinking that if you have HIV, it's a death sentence, or you should be scorned, or that you belong to some untouchable pariah group that must not be brought forward. We have scenarios where there are coordinators for HIV units that are having challenges with getting funds out of their entities to be able to mount critical education work and critical community outreach work. That's where we are.
Wow. It's serious. So in terms of the youths, I think the Ministry of Education and the Ministry of Health should definitely come together and find some resources and let us do what we need to do. And what are some of the things that are needed out there in terms of educating the youth? What are some things that are needed?
You need to have the conversation that speaks about HIV 101 as in how, what is HIV? What is AIDS? What's the difference? Why it's not a death sentence? We need to start talking about modes of transmission and you know, the body fluids that can infect you or that can't infect you. We need to treat with attitudes that suggest that it's a death sentence, or you suddenly become a different person and you no longer need compassion. We're still treating with the idea that even education on the basics of how your body is and why your body is at greater risk when you're a young person, good, and why we need to make sure that readiness is something. We can't be on this old discussion of abstinence only. In anything relevant, treating with HIV and AIDS, especially with young people, the word only is dangerous because we're giving misinformation. It has to be a combination of things. There are some people who will abstain, but abstinence needs skills. You can't just tell them, don't do it. You have to prepare people for understanding what a sexual possibility situation is and not to go into it. We have to have people understand that, okay, you may have been born with HIV, so there may be issues, all right. Make sure that you stay on your medication to make sure that your viral load is low, that you're virally suppressed. And talk about how you disclose with a partner. We have to understand that there are still issues around people being comfortable with someone who has HIV, who is a family member. And this is especially so of a challenge with young people, because when you're young, you're more susceptible to peer pressure. You are susceptible to every stigma that this society has. And this society is always ready to blame young people. So instead of blaming, we needed to prepare. We needed to make sure that there is readiness. We can't have a scenario where in school, teachers are allowed to cherry pick which areas of the health and family life education you give to children, and you miss the important parts. You miss STIs, you miss HIV education, you miss AIDS education.
These things you say are deliberately not being taught in schools, because teachers are just...
Of course, they're deliberately not being taught. Mm. Yeah, the Ministry of Education engaged in a lovely exercise with, I think, UNDP, UNFPA, and some NGOs to look at strengthening the health and family life curriculum and making sure that there were steps taken to include comprehensive sexuality education. I'd like to ask anybody where that initiative is. Good. Mm-hmm. Where are the resources that make sure that these NGOs that are experienced, that have skilled people, are still able to do the necessaries and reach out? We don't even have safe spaces for young people to have discussion, and it's not a priority.
Well, I mean, times have changed, and in terms of a safe space, you don't necessarily need an actual space to have a safe space, especially when it's connecting to these young people. I mean, I would advise you NGOs get together. If you're getting no funding from the government or whatever, the hell with them, you could go on TikTok. You all could have a TikTok page. I don't know if you all consider this or have this already, a TikTok page.
This is already in gear. Right. What kind of thing happening? Organizations have taken to the virtual space. Right. However, when it comes to this, there are still issues where you need a geographic space, because in the event that a young person presents with an STI or a young person is sexually assaulted, you still need a physical space and a physical person. Yeah. The telehealth approach works for certain things. Like you mentioned, FPAT has a wonderful telehealth program and several virtual spaces that attend to the needs of especially young people. Other organizations do it as well. However, you can't negate the necessity for service provision, because according to all of the statistics from 2000 to the present, COVID had a really severe impact on the number of STIs presenting and STIs presenting with young people, because you're home and there was no socializing, there was no ability to do particular things. And anything that happens within that space and sphere, it's like a natural disaster. You will see an uptick in particular things. So there is the need for that space. There is the need to be able to treat with the issues and treat with possible infections.
All right, I hear you. So, of course, folks, we're talking about, you know, yesterday being World AIDS Day and the youth. So when somebody comes in, like they go into a health center and they, you know, told that they have AIDS or HIV, you know, what the case may be, or even an STI. You leave it up to that person's personal responsibility to do what they have to do, like not go and infect anybody else, or is there a database or anything?
Fortunately, there's a process which talks to pre-test and post-test counseling, where information is given, resources are provided, you get a clear idea of what to expect from the test, what kind of test you're taking, if it's a rapid or if it's another type, or if there are, you know, possibles of if you are positive, if you are negative, what those things mean, and also referrals to organizations that can lend support, that can enhance the education. Of course, a lot of those organizations are stretched to capacity, I emphasize again. But there is a methodology that treats with when you go to a center and you get tested. It's a process. You're not left on your own. And even in recent times where there's also the advent of self-testing, good, there are support structures to be able to access support that you will need when you engage in that problem.
All right. Where is the support for, like, let's say a teenager, you know, 17, 18, living home, a single parent mom thing comes in, HIV, do you call, once they're under 18, do you call any parent?
Well, here's the thing. There's a tricky bit of legality that we are looking at. Mm-hmm. If the person is under 18, it means that they're still a child.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, most of the facilities are A, state-run, and B, if they're not state-run, they adhere to certain protocols which make notification of an adult almost a necessity, because the reason that that person may have become positive could be as a result of coerced or forced sexual activity.
Mm. All right, so there's but is there a trace back to some adult who may have, you know, contracted that young person? Or is our report made to the police or something? Or does any legality gets involved? Anything legal gets involved?
Anything legal gets involved, but also because of the fact that you have people who are, you know, career counselors, medical professionals who are required to report particular things by law.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to bring the law into the scenario because there needs to be an investigation in the case of certain things happening.
All right, okay. I don't want to do something that's like the teenage pregnancy thing where you're just going on and on and nothing happening. You know? There must be passed up to it somewhere, you know? All right.
We can always do more.
All right, okay, of course. You'll be taking some calls. I see the phone line ringing there. Hello, good afternoon.
This boy.
Mm.
And your guest. You know, I just tell it like I see it. So you just want fellas out there, real kids. Real kids, fellas out who have it. And giving the wife and other people this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And watch me. You as a woman, cooking, washing, cleaning, doing everything right, clean by the children. And you come in home, you playing the fool out there with all kind of dirty woman. And you come and give me that. But you know, she will not be, it's a revenge now, you know. She will not get past much people, this thing. It's a revenge thing over there. It's not a joke. Watch me. Cool it out there.
All right, man. Yeah, but what about that revenge thing over there? Because like, I've been trying to tell you, I mean, there's no, like, database. I mean, there's no sign where I read that on somebody and I say, hey, that person is HIV positive. You really, really don't know. So you really had to be on your P's and Q's out here because you don't know.
Yeah, but even with that scenario, and I just want to highlight one of the things that happens because of stigma and discrimination and because of not spreading the information. You see this idea of dirty woman, dirty man, clean man. We have to abolish those judgment-laden tools.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a large part of what makes people go underground. You don't want to be stigmatized. You don't want to be labeled. You don't want to be looked at differently. So let's look at how we treat with people living with HIV.
Right.
So they're not dirty. You just have an infection.
Hmm.
All right? The second part is that phenomenon of people wanting revenge and people wanting to, well, I get it. And so I get it. So I give it. That is a symptom of the society putting people in frames where they feel abused, where they feel used, where they feel like they don't have a course of action other than revenge, because people are angry and hurt. We're still not at the place where we're normalizing this, where we're making this, well, all right, you got HIV, let's talk, what do you need? Let's provide you with the full support. And that consistent conversation about not stigmatizing people. At one point in time, if anybody's old enough to remember, we had severe stigma and discrimination around cancer, especially ovarian cancer and breast cancer. But because we've consistently been at it and have advocates talking about it and had conversations and normalized it, we've changed the communication about it. In the same way, we have to change the communication and the environment around HIV and AIDS.
All right, let's take another call. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, babe.
Yeah, man.
Good afternoon to the guest. It's been such a long while I called.
Yeah.
I want to find out from a guest. I like to deal with data. I know somewhere about, I saw that there were 11,000 persons there about living with HIV in Trinidad. And from that number, I don't know if you're supposed to have data, if you're rattling off all this information to me, how much of those persons would constitute children? That is one. And two, my other question is, in the U.S., I can go up on CDC, and they told us last year that HIV is on the rise, specifically among young persons, and it's more so through the advent of Twitter beef and content creation, other people being promiscuous, and about the dollars, right? We cannot specifically say in terms of our data from here, if persons are also doing such, because we know we have young people who are also a part of these groups, OnlyFans and a host of others, right? So I just want to find out from your guest there in terms of the 11,000 persons there about what living with HIV and AIDS, how much of those are young persons, and whether or not the advent of technology and these apps, if that is also a contributing factor in terms of your accumulation of data. Just before I go, Biz, your guest said that a lot haven't been done. I want to disagree with him. A lot have been done in terms of the issue with HIV and AIDS that we have seen a deceleration, particularly coming from Dr. Emery Brown, who was in charge back then. And this slide that we are seeing in terms of the numbers from 11,000, it speaks to a number of persons are aware in terms of what they should do when it comes to the issue of sexual activity. A lot of listeners, I disagree with him in terms of that position, all right?
All right, man, thank you. A couple of questions, well, yeah. You're laughing, man.
First of all, I never said a lot hasn't been done. I said a lot more needs to be done, and I said we dropped the ball. And I said it because I've been part of this fight since my 20s. And us being able to get statistics is still a challenge. And it's still a challenge because if the gentleman, I always welcome when people highlight things. A lot has been done. However, a lot stopped being done. A lot decreased in activity. Track the funding, chase the money. If you don't believe me, look at the spend. Yesterday was World AIDS Day. Where were the great amount of people that usually would take part in rallies, in stepping out in the street, in discussion? Where has been the massive amount of community work that's necessary? So it's visible. Good. If you don't see the spend, then okay, you can indicate by virtue of the fact that yes, things are lacking. Secondly, in terms of statistics and young people, we still have challenges getting statistics. Young people have always occupied either half or close to half of the statistics when it comes to HIV infection. Because our discussion around catering for young people has dropped. Check the Trinidad and Tobago Public Health Labs. There are also fewer people being tested in the last 7 years. And that's because the preventative work, the messaging work, the community outreach has decreased. So we have less people being willing to be tested, or you have more people being willing to be tested by proxy, and tested by proxy is simple. For us men, and for those young men, if your partner is pregnant and she goes to the clinic, part of the regular slew of things is that there will be an HIV test to determine if you need to go on medication for the period of the pregnancy to decrease the opportunity of passing on HIV to the unborn child. What? It is taken as, well, all right, if you get tested and you good, well, I good, so I don't need to test. And that is an increasing phenomenon.
Definitely, folks. All right, of course, 625-2257-306-1065. In terms of the, well, HIV and the LGBTQ community, you know, that's another issue as well. Where do you stand there with that? How are things? Is there a database there? Because we know that then, too, there are some bisexual people as well, too. You know, especially the men, maybe having sex with men, passing it on to women, that sort of thing. And this is in the youths as well.
The reality of anything with the LGBTQ community is steeped in the reality of the rest of the society. Any community that you force to hide, that you stigmatize, that you label as non-deserving, is going to engage in the risky behavior because you have to hide. The first thing on your mind isn't safety. Good. The LGBTQ community have been one of the communities at the forefront of activities to do with prevention and to do with advocacy and to do with providing support to even communities that are non-LGBTQI. All of these ideas and thoughts have to rest with two realities. One, it doesn't matter which community you belong to. What matters is the behavior. It's what you do. It's the risky behavior that you take. It's the unprotected sex. It's the chance of stealing an opportunity. It is the commercial activity that you engage in when you're desperate and you're willing to take an extra 30 or extra 20 to go without a condom. It's the scenario of us telling people that because you exercise a different sexual preference or you have a different sexual orientation, that you are less deserving of resources or less deserving of support or less deserving of care and concern. We have still been engaging in stigma and discrimination against the number of communities. And that continues to be one of the issues that we will face when treating with HIV and AIDS, especially in the face of dealing with young people and risk realities.
All right, well then, so what, in final wrapping up here, of course, in terms of the youth, how are we really getting our message out to the youth? What mediums are we using to get the message clear out to the youth? And I do believe that sometimes we need to do things a little harshly, like show some videos, for example, like we always talking about diabetes. Diabetes in the youths are on the rise. I believe you should show the youth some videos, take them to the hospital where people's legs are cut off and, you know, get them some, you know, some things. So take the youths to the, I don't know, hospitals, and let the actual people with HIV and AIDS come and talk to them, speak to them, you know, really get the point across.
That's been tried, and it doesn't work. No, it doesn't work, and I'll tell you why it doesn't work. When you're a young person, one of the things that you treat with, and we in the behavioral science element look at something called personal risk perception. Good? In our community of Trinidad and Tobago, the idea that I am at risk doesn't resonate because we believe that, you know, is a community and is a population. Or we believe, well, I go to church and I save. Or we believe, well, I married. Or we believe, well, I come from this higher, you know, echelon socioeconomic group. So I'm not at risk. So the personal risk perception is poor. Nobody works on the idea of fear because what you fear, you will take the adventure and find out. Added to which, we have always known that when you are young, there are things you will do that you are young because your sense of personal risk perception is poor. The second thing you don't have is belief in the solution because you will rationalize that, oh, well, people say condoms do work or condoms not 100%. So, all right, you'll go with A. If they're not 100%, I'm not going to use them. We also go in the realm of, you know, taking the risk. Because risk is nice and risk is sexy. We will take risk because we like that feeling of adventure, adrenaline rush, your blood pumping. And then we have the last category. We have an approach to things which says that something will kill you. And more of our young people are at the point where, hey, something will kill you. What's the worst that happen? You don't get it already, you could get medication. So there isn't that attention that is going to put there. And then we've decreased the education. Good. Once we decrease those things, we're going to have rioters, we're going to have challenges. I hear people talk about a lot has been done. Yes, biomedical, great, but the reality is we don't have these funds to treat everybody that turns up HIV positive. So we have to engage in the things that look at prevention, to look at support, to look at decreasing stigma and discrimination.
Hmm. All right, so it seems like, so how do we get the word out to the powers that be to support and let the funds flow? How do we
start
do
that? Start turning up outside the offices in numbers.
That is what we have to do.
Hundreds and thousands.
That is what we have to do.
Start turning up. No, that's what we have to do, because at the end of the day, we the citizens have to advocate for our rights. Yeah. If we do not, then we're going to keep losing people. Yesterday, we lost a soldier to the fight who spent the better part of his adult years as an advocate and as a stand-in and as a support and as a counselor and giving home care to people who were HIV positive and no one else wanted to see or speak. So we have to turn up. We can't fall asleep at the wheel, because given the opportunity, all of our leaders are going to go to trend fund. Everybody's looking at medication and re-engaging people who have been lost to medication. Those are fantastic measures, but you can't treat everybody. We just don't have the resources. So we have to understand how we treat with insurance, that our young people especially can engage in prevention and can protect themselves.
Prevention is always better than cure. And of course, getting proper sexual education on the school's curriculum, which is necessary. I mean, I know that would take some legislation, but how come we had to go and march at that too in 2024 going into 2025?
That doesn't require legislation. It requires an active decision. But sharing information does not require a legislative change. We have health and family life education. We have biology. In biology, you learn about your genitals. In general science, good. In human and social biology, there's no legislative element that needed to be put into those. And all the content you need just needs to be concentrated and delivered in a particular manner that young people can uptake it, or that all learners can uptake it. We have to be serious about it. We have to be real and deliberate. There's no need for legislative change. There just needs to be active will and the understanding that the failure to do so will put us in a scenario that some countries have had to be in, where your young people are so ravaged by conditions relevant to AIDS that you have to hire 2 and 3 people for the same job in a year because one of them will no longer be with us.
Definitely. All right,
active will.
Active will. Must have the will. Where there's a will, there's a way. All right? Where there's a will, there must be a way. Okay, Solano, thank you very much, son. Keep up the good fight.
Hey, thanks a lot, Biz. And right. Thanks to Freedom
yeah, man.
For highlighting. All right, thank you guys a lot.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.